because Quattrocuoro is sitting here, so I want to be near with him. So, dear officials, dear representatives, dear friends and guests from near and from far, and of course, dear Konradin. As mayor of Davos, it is my great honor to welcome you very warmly here with us in Davos, in our town hall, in this marvelous old chamber. It's the so-called Great Chamber, where in medieval times, representatives from all the surrounding areas came together to discuss the important matters of organizing life in this alpine region. Davos has for a long time been a place where people from around the world come together. Since the middle of the 19th century, we have welcomed guests from all countries. Our gaze is directed at the world, and we are home to many, even if only temporarily. And so please, to all of you, feel very much at home during your stay here with us in Davos. I'm very honored to deliver the friendliest greetings from our municipality and say a few words about our Davos and about our Quattrocuoro. Our Davos could only develop towards an alpine city because our ancestors have always been or have always had an open mind for ideas from people coming here from abroad. It was a German refugee, Dr. Alexander Spengler, who promoted over 150 years ago that Davos's high altitude climate has a healing impact on people suffering from tuberculosis. And it was the Dutchman Willem Jan Holzboer who helped Spengler to develop sanitary infrastructure and who initiated the first railroad in the county of Graubünden from Langquart to Davos, which brought thousands of patients up here. Or it was the famous British author Sir Arthur Conan Doyle who wrote enthusiastic articles about his early skiing adventures here in Davos, and in this way he kind of helped to lay the foundation for today's winter tourism industry. And for Davos today, it is a place where the most influential people in the world meet. You know that? In January. But it is also a place where international specialists conduct high-valued research on, for example, bone fractures, allergies, climate change, and artificial intelligence. Not only in January. It is a place where we as a municipality once again try to look at the future, to the future, to look for ways how to benefit from digital transformation, to think about new urban planning with ideas like alpine home offices for new ways of living and working and studying, and with great responsibility for our climate and for our next generation. And despite our, maybe even because of our gaze at the world, we also want to be very careful and mindful of our cultural and natural heritage, from the urban center to the very marvelous rural side valleys and mountain peaks, and of course, we want to honor our inhabitants. Today, we came together to proudly honor, for once, not a man or a woman, who came to Davos and brought something here. Today we honor a man who was born here and grew up here and then gave his attention, his curiosity, his mindfulness and kindness, his knowledge of language and understanding of people, and not to forget his unbelievable talent of communicating and writing to the world. He gave it to his fellow literature students at universities in France, Sweden and Zurich, to his own students as a professor for French language in the Congo and later in Khartoum. He gave it to the International Red Cross Organization and as their delegate for people in numberless countries such as Bangladesh, Vietnam, India, later Afghanistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan and many more. And of course, he gave it to the people from South Sudan. First, during a 7-year stay with the Anuak tribe, which led to the important deployment in the late 80s where he was relevantly involved in the rescue of 10,000 lost boys during tragic war activities. And of course, which led into his relevant efforts for peace in South Sudan, from where he finally gained his second name. Konradin Perner took his name, his new name, and his life experiences back to Davos, and he conserves them in a very careful and impressive way in his parents' house at the Matterstrasse. As a municipality, we are at the very moment working together with the University of Zurich and with Konradin to find ways to help to preserve his legacy. But today, we came together to celebrate that Davos is proudly to be the place who can call itself the home of the kind and great Quattrocuoro.
It's a very great pleasure to be here today on behalf of the Swiss Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And I would like to start with thanking Joanne for bringing all this together and for raising our awareness of this important event to which we are happy to be part of. The giving of the South Sudanese passport is definitely a recognition of your great achievement and work in South Sudan. And your presence there and amazing work really put Switzerland in a very good position in South Sudan and among the international community. And this presence lasts until today. Although, you know, some diplomats come and go, but what matters most is that people know about South Sudan thanks to you. And more than speaking out about Swiss Foreign Affairs, I would like to mention a few names of people you knew and who represented the department in Juba. I'm thinking in particular of Oliver Humbel and his wife, Pew, of Christian Scherer, who unfortunately cannot be there today. Oliver is in New York, working as for Switzerland for the UN Security Council. And let me also mention Ferdinand von Habsburg, as well as Lisa Ipscher. All those people are still very active in the department and really speak highly of you and of South Sudan in particular. So even though diplomats, as I say, come and go, rest assured that the next generation, and most of them, are aware of South Sudan and will work for it as much as they can, thanks to you and thanks to those people who spread your words. And that's also the reason why we are here today with my colleagues, because we heard so much about you and read also so much about your work. Among your achievements, of course, the lost boys, as the mayor mentioned, one of them being an urban Napoleon here today, but also the monitoring of the Nuba Mountain ceasefire, which led to the House of Nationalities program, and then which transferred into the Kotel, working on peace in the region. But maybe the biggest achievement today, which shows how you are still very important in this part of the world, is that the messages that will come later bring together people of South Sudan, which is still currently fighting. But we'll hear from President Salva Kiir, we will hear from Dr. Riek Machar, and I think it shows, again, how convening you can be in bringing those people together. And for this, we are very, very grateful and hope that your legacy will last very long and your presence here today is a very honorable thing. Thank you very much. Quattrocuoro.
Again, in this room where on the 6606 we founded the Academia Rhetica in this room. But that I can be here now as a representative of the ICRC is a great pleasure. I brought you personally already the greetings of our Vice President Gilles Carbonnier, who had the fortune to stay in your famous house. And also our president, Peter Maurer, sends best regards. He was president until last Thursday. And he, after 10 years, has left the ICRC now, and I, as the oldest, had to lead the celebrations. And I did that in form of haikus, and haikus are very strict Japanese poems. And one is, as a little, there are aphorisms in haiku form. And one was, and it relates here certainly as well, Freunde, as it's always 5, 7, 5 syllables. Freunde wie Sterne sind nicht immer zu sehen, aber immer da. That's what I said to him as a farewell. And the other one, to introduce the meaning of the ICRC, I think was appropriate. We gave him a picture of Aleppo, where everything is destroyed, but an artist is painting, and out of his pencil comes a bubble with, as you describe, paradise, just a little bubble. And it says, IKRK Zweck, Hoffnungszeichen zu setzen, selbst in Aleppo. But this counts also for other places where we are working in our 80 delegations. And you know all that ICRC is very active in the South Sudan, and I've put together facts and figures. But today it's not the facts and figures about our activities in the places in the world, but about you. And we have a historian, we have a group of historians at the ICRC, and they very kindly provide us with some old things and even important old things. And this is the rapport de mission de Konradin Perner from March 1989. And because he has written so well, not only in a poetical sense, but in a spiritual sense, which I find so important for all of us here, and for all our people at the ICRC, and that's why I will put it in my rapport de mission, de cette mission d'être ici, what you have written some time ago. And in this report I read, which is confidential, of course, Konradin Perner writes, some short remarks on the exterior circumstances of an ICRC delegate's work in the field, followed by some notes on the Nilotes and their particular existentials attitudes. The spiritual personal compensation a delegate working in the Southern Sudan is truly magnificent. To be sent to the Southern Sudan as an ICRC delegate is one of the most requiring, but also one of the most fascinating, beautiful, and rewarding tasks one can imagine. Even if the work will be difficult, the time spent in the Southern Sudan amongst these proud people will certainly be amongst the most unforgettable memories of a delegate. And he writes here, having lived in the South Sudan for about 8 years, out of which 5, we heard that, in the most remote parts of the Upper Nile province in the country of the Anuaks, and having analyzed the history and the culture of the Nilotes for almost 15 years, I was positively surprised to learn that the ICRC was interested in my services because of my concern for the Sudan and because of my continuous interest in the humanitarian cause defended by the ICRC. And Konradin Perner at the time writes for all of us, or those who have access to, and I will enlarge this access now by quoting, you write, Southern Sudan is very beautiful, full of life and full of majestic silence, an endless country without time or horizon. The Nilotes are convinced that they are living in paradise, and even this is sometimes hard to believe. The beauty of the Southern Sudan gets reflected by the night sky, which is without comparison and by the people who keep their human dignity with courage and pride. And I remember my own mission to the South Sudan when I was really far out of everything, no internet access, and sleeping under a mosquito tent and admired that sky. And then in the morning at breakfast, I told to my colleagues, "Wow, that sky!" And but the interesting thing, Ursa Major, the Gross Wagen, no, Urs is upside down. And then when we had internet access again for half an hour or so, a colleague came and said, "It's easy. You just take your iPad and then put in Google Sky Maps and turn it around, and then you have that impression." And there I realized that our world is turning flat again. And you write, after the nightly sky, also of the very beautiful people, not just because of their often amazing physical appearance, but because they express in very conscious manner their human essence, the spiritual purity of their existence. Extremely cultivated people, in spite of their nakedness and material poverty, very rich in human values, which elsewhere have been replaced by more material matters. And then you draw the attention of the delegates on these human and cultural aspects of our mission and encourage us and recommend to make personal contacts with these shy but really fascinating people. The delegate will feel greatly rewarded for his sincerity. His work in the field will become much easier. Instead of suffering and feeling alone, he will get, or she will get help and earn some sympathy, feel at ease and enjoy his existence. For understanding a person with a different cultural background, that's also für Dezalüt. For understanding a person with a different cultural background, one does not need to fear for one's own identity. A foreign culture does in no way threaten the own identity, but, well, on the contrary, essentially widens, deepens, and finally strengthens it. Very basic conditions to any approach of a foreign culture is deep and sincere respect, as well as a natural modesty, two qualities which are not only to be expressed by physical behavior, but most important, you say, and you say rightly so, also by the cautious use of language. One does well in always keeping in mind that it is the delegate who are the guests. And qualities, you say, are required from a delegate. It's always good if a delegate likes people and is interested in them. Mutual confidence is absolutely crucial for a sound and constructive cooperation. It can only be achieved through frequent personal contacts and polite, kind, and generous behavior. One of the haikus I addressed to Peter Maurer last Thursday was also... Was mir imponiert, Peter Maurers Hauptverdienst, Vertrauensbildung. And some basic characteristics of the Nilotes, that's the Dinkas, Nuers, Shuluks, Luos, and Anuaks, you put in your report also. You say they are living a lonely, difficult, and often dangerous life. But impressed you are by their independence, courage, patience, prudence, physical and mental strength. Really used to endure hardship, and this may even be the reason why they have an extremely positive philosophy regarding their own human existence. They would never blame nature for the harsh conditions of life, but are, on the contrary, very grateful for everything which is given to them. They are the ones to decide if they want to accept a gift. It is the person making a gift who should be grateful and even feel honored. You ask also, are people there really arrogant? And now you say, no, they are fearless. They are never afraid to demonstrate feelings, never feel inferior, self-conscious and proud of their own human identity. You say they are very kind people, and you have the experience. Pleasant and very positive-minded, very social, and adore to laugh. That's good. Nobody goes to see a bad man. Sharing of food or the refusal to accept to share the food offered by somebody is most important. And I remember in my short mission to the South Sudan, we also were doing these airdrops where we let fall down sacks of nourriture from Tupolev's and Antonov's airplanes. And I was very emotional to see what it means to get food. And when I came home to a group of neurologists, English speaking, American slang, they said, you shouldn't do such things, you only have more problems next year. So it gives food for considerations also. And then you say, and I like that also, especially the use of language are the greatest differences between Europeans and Nilotes, you say. For the Nilotes, language, including silence and physical communication, has great spiritual importance. It is a powerful weapon of a very dangerous use. To avoid misunderstandings merely due to differences in the use of language and which are not easy to be made forgotten, the delegate, we, should use a language which strictly follows the rules of respect and which is always under control. Never, but absolutely never, you say, insult or offend another person. So respect is the basic condition to human relationship, and it's required at all instances. And then you say, you were not so old as now at that time, but you say absolutely essential when approaching or addressing elderly persons, age is for the Nilotes of great spiritual significance. A person's consciousness getting its dimensions mainly in the course of time, thus becoming powerful, merci vielmals, with advancing age. Huh? Elderly people need a particularly delicate and kind approach. If people of a higher age, or otherwise of importance, are not met with the due respect, they may simply disappear. Absence is, like silence, a significant part of Nilotic behavior. So consciousness of time is your seventh point in that register. The Nilotes do things slowly and carefully, a behavior which can upset the delegate, who of course would like to have things done quickly. Patience will be required, for the Nilotes do not hurry, not because they are lazy, but because they always want to keep their human dignity. Thus the Nilotes, for instance, hardly ever run but stalk, thereby advancing astonishingly very fast and moreover for a long time, when the running European would already have lost energy, and not to talk about his dignity. Things which are done quickly are usually not well done, are done without love, and moreover make people unnecessarily nervous. Thank you for this gift.
Thank you. I think as a messenger first, so maybe I have to unpack the long-awaited passport, Kochakoro. I was given twice, so now I have to give it to you twice. So it's a presidential seal. So then you can remove it.
So there, marvelous. Can you go in front of the slide and do the same?
Okay. Yeah, it's come in a presidential seal, so you, and there, have your passport. I have to show it to the immigration, that I hand it over to you.
But let me check the expiry date. Is it before or after me?
I don't know who will expire first.
Yeah,
most likely the passport. But you are a citizen, so you go like everybody else to renew your passport.
Yeah. I can't read it anyway.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
So, welcome.
Indeed, you were a little bit late. Huh? But
10 years late, yes. But you have to remember, we were all becoming citizens also at the same time. The first time I was in Switzerland, I was traveling on a Ugandan passport. The second time I was traveling so I have also been a stateless.
He had 11 passports.
Yeah, so travel Kenyan travel permit. I was also getting my passport the same
Saudi
time.
Saudi Arabia, Ethiopia, everything.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming. I think this has been an honorable day, particularly for myself. Having visited Kwachakoro here, I think should have been 30 years ago. When I was young, and I tried to learn about snowboards, and I had struggled standing up, and then going into this house, that I was almost worried I would have nightmares with the skin of leopards everywhere, pipes. Even though I come from home, I was never close to such artifacts. But I would say that was my greatest education and experience. And as you can see, Kwachakoro is no longer Kwachakoro. It's the bridge of unity of my country. And as somebody who grew up around him, I feel so privileged and so well placed to enjoy not only his company, but also his relation with people like President Selfa and Riek Machar, who hardly agree on anything else. Maybe Kwachakoro is among the few items they agree on. And that is really such a good opportunity. So I also have access to them and regard from many people, many friends of Kwachakoro. If we had to make a video, we would be sitting here for hours and days listening to Kwachakoro friends. I have already been accused by a few of his friends that how did I left them out. If they knew ahead of time, they would have sent their own greeting. So this is a way of life. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you, Kwachakoro. And thanks. I think you can keep this.
And we were there sitting all alone. And then he took his passport out of his pocket and said, "You see this passport? Such a passport you will get now." Then he showed me, then I was looking in. And then I said, "Okay, so I will keep this passport until I get mine." He said, no, this is my passport. I said, no, yeah. And he said, but it's my picture is inside. I said, don't worry, I will put my picture. And then he insisted and said, no, you should give it back. You will get your own passport. The good thing is that I did not get it at the time because the passport they had at the time of independence actually was not valid. It did not correspond to international criteria. So they had to make new passports. If I had got the passport then my passport would have been not valid. And then also I must say I was also a little bit guilty because of this delay, because the president told me, well, if you go out, you will find people there in front of the office, sitting there, and you fill in the forms, and then you go. Then the people were there. I was not even amazed that there was suddenly just a table there with some people waiting for me. Then they said, oh, you fill in this form. And I was just looking and said, application for passport. I said, no, I'm not making any application. I got this. I'm not applying for it. So I left. So then I had to wait for 10 years until I until finally I got it thanks to the communication department of South Sudan. Yeah, something else. In 76 or so, I went from Malakal, one of the towns in South Sudan, with a very old boat up the Sobat River. And I went together with a young newer boy, maybe 16 years old, who had worked for me in Khartoum. And he did not want me to go alone because he said, no, I have to protect you because these people in South Sudan, you will see, they are very bad, he said. That was amazing. And then he came with me. Then on that river, suddenly he brought another newer fellow who was very sick, had some stomach problems and all this. So I gave some antibiotics to that unknown newer boy, and he took it and he left. Then I told my friend James that Noor, and you, I said, I mean, you can tell your friend, at least he could have said thank you. I mean, what is it? I gave him so many in the whole course I gave him, but he did not say. So my friend James, he went back to that man and a boy and told him, you should say thank you to him. So this boy came back and was looking at me and said, huh? What did you say? You want me to say thank you? Huh? I can thank you. That's nothing. But if I don't say thank you, it will always remain in my heart. And one day I will have the opportunity to do something good for you as well. Okay. I didn't say much. But later I found that, many times I found that this actually is true. When they don't say thank you, they remember all the time. And this is actually what happened with the president, who suddenly, after independence, he remembered me and what I had done in South Sudan, and he decided to give me a passport. Never he had honored me in any way or done anything or praised me or what. But, that was one thing. And the other thing also which shows this kind of kindness is when Napoleon's daughter was born, he had to give her a name, of course, and he was choosing the name of my mother, Marianne. So he went here to the cemetery to make sure that he was writing the name correctly. And that is really very nice to honor my mother. I once asked him, why don't you call your son Kwachakoro? He said, no, you are still alive. We can only honor dead people by giving that name. So actually I want to do to say the same thing. I just thank you for honoring me. I don't really know for what, but I'm, of course, very honored that you are here. That is absolutely wonderful. And it is, of course, mainly thanks to Joanne. Where is she? I don't know, even see her. But anyway, thanks a lot for Joanne for having brought you here. And it is really very kind of you to have come. The people from the foreign ministry, from the ICRC, but all you other people, old friends, my oldest friends are also here. They are from the primary school. So I'm really very happy that you have come. I'm very surprised. It's like something which is not true. Thank you also for the song. Wonderful also that you came. Finally, if I'm already talking now, let's see where I should put this passport. I should maybe say something. You know, to be honored, of course, is it's very nice, but I used to joke, I said, okay, this will be my funeral while still alive, some kind of Hauptprobe. And it's very nice, you know, you are still alive, and they say so nice things about you, and it's also good, so next time it will not be as good as this time, but still, maybe it will be okay also. But to honor somebody for his life, it is aiming at the past. It has no future. And that, in a way, is very sad. I mean, it's nice that you honor me, but it would be nicer if you could give me a future and extend my life to time after my death. That would be nice. And that's why somebody sitting here, I think Oswald Eaton, on one hand, had this idea of a foundation, and especially of using the house, my apartment in Davos, for scholars or for artists, researchers, and yeah, scientifically interested people. They could spend some months here and work and enjoy, but also visitors here from all these scientific societies in Davos, they could also stay here for a while, because often they have visitors from abroad and look for a place to where to stay. So a foundation could run that, and I have already made my last will giving the house to Davos, but still they are not sure if they want it, but we will see. And I hope it will come to a good end. It will be after my death anyway, so. But it will be for the future. And that should be, in a way, the meaning of being honored and of your presence here as well. What did I want? This is just because this is very heavy and I don't want to carry it home again. This I want to give to Beatrice, where is she? Yes. It's just my books, and you may have time to read it. So
thank you so much. I actually started reading it, and
you have it already.
Yes, I have. Okay, it. But I have it in the Kindle version, so I'm happy to have the real thing.
Yeah,
it's
is.
Very kind of you.
Anyway,
I really enjoyed this.
I wrote something in also. So
thank you so much. And one element I forgot in my speech was that, you know, in your prologue you write, why did you go? Why did you come if you live again?
That's what I tell at the end.
Yeah, exactly. And somehow the fact of getting your passport maybe closes this cycle, and I'm happy.
He has visited me in South Sudan, and he's the one, as I told you before, who has written about me in his newspaper. So I want to honor him as well and give him some sprit for his car.
Thank you so much.
And this for drinking. This is a small gobelet. You can clean it better than I did. I brought that. I bought that in '72 in Bangladesh. It's silver and it's very nice. You can.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. So, anyway, also well merited. That is for Joan, who has brought you here and has really worked very hard to get you here. And she's so kind and wonderful, actually. So, you can this actually has also a story. I gave it once to my mother. It's a necklace, and I bought it in in Faizabad in Afghanistan. I went there with a Swedish delegate, and he wanted to buy a necklace for his girlfriend, and the one who made the necklace asked for $300. I said, no. And then finally they agreed on, or this, he went down to $200. But the Swedes still said, no, no, it's too much, 150 or what. So anyway, he did not buy it. And then he left. Then I went to the shop and bought it for 200. And then the Swede got, he said, I pay you 300, I pay you 400. And he went up to 500. I said, no, it's finished. Now it's too late. So you have that. You can. Did you open it already?
Yeah.
It has this Afghan stone, this lapidolazis, or I don't know what, and it's actually very beautiful. You can show them around if they want to see. They want to see that.